broadcast.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Casting from the Valentine Quarter, as it's now called, appropriate on St. Valentine's Day. We are joined by our Friday forum, Roderick O'Gorman, TD, leader of the Green Party, TD for Dublin West, James Gagan, Fine Gael, TD for Dublin Bay South, and Alice Leahy, director of the Alice Leahy Trust. Good morning and welcome one and all. The headline was Michael Healy-Ray left in charge of the country. It's not quite entirely true, is it, James?
I think they called him the designated survivor from Dingle,
which is a great headline.
It certainly is. No, look, this is obviously has happened every year now for a number of years, where we send out a significant delegation. This year, in total, we're sending over 40 members representing the state right across the world. And of course, the United States is a big part of that. And we know in Ireland, over 250,000 jobs are directly created from foreign direct investment. But we also know that Irish companies are creating huge numbers of jobs abroad over, just to give you an example of America alone, over 115,000 jobs Irish companies have created in the United States. And it's about ensuring that bilateral trade relations right across the world.
That's the theory, but there's no talking sense to that man, is there?
Well, you got to be at the table. I mean, that is the reality when it comes to meeting the President of the United States. There are countries right across the European Union that would bite our arm off in order to get the opportunity.
You know, this narrative that's going around that you respect the office even if you don't respect the man. You know, transpose somebody else in there. Adolf Hitler, respect the office of the Führer even if you don't respect the man. Sometimes you have to diss the man. Alice.
I think it's shocking, actually. I know our politicians have gone abroad over the years and they say it does help trade. But how can you have a rational discussion with that man? I think he is insulting people right throughout the world. I think it is truly shocking. But also I'm concerned about, I mean, you're not just talking about one minister. You'll have somebody carrying his bag. You'll have his advisor. I don't know how many more. And this is all public money.
But don't we have to go, Alice? Don't we have to be in the room?
Well,
if we get the invitation,
and Micheál Martin, we don't know if he will get the invitation yet. And I can just imagine him going up and presenting the bowl of shamrock and your man Trump saying, well, look, I'll extend my golf course to the whole of Ireland and we will do that. It's simple. It's shocking.
Yeah. Roderick?
Well, when I became a minister in 2020, I was sceptical about the whole St. Patrick's Day visit process, I have to say. And having gone through it now over 3 years, I have seen its value. I've seen its value in terms of those political links. Like, I had the opportunity to meet with Richard Neal, who is the congressman and heads of the Ways and Means Committee in the United States, with Irish entrepreneurs, and just being able to bring them into the room with him was really important.
But the problem now is that all those committees, however powerful they are all headed up by Republicans. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So you might meet the minority chair of a committee, but the majority is going to be a Trumper.
Well, there were Republicans marching in the Philadelphia parade that I participated in the New York parade. Like, we do have relations on the Republican side of the House as well.
They're all terrified of Trump, all of them. But they have shown no backbone or spine, with the exception, finally, of Mitch McConnell, who's developed a spine. Yeah. Although slugs don't usually have spines, but anyway.
But Pat, I think the other advantage of these visits, and particularly to the United States, is the link with the diaspora. I had the opportunity to visit the Commodore Barry Center in Philadelphia, the Ashling Center in Yonkers, and I was genuinely moved by how much it means to Irish Americans to have representatives of the government come over, meet with them, chat with them at Patrick's Day. I think sometimes, and I'll be honest, I'd be guilty of this myself, we can be a bit sceptical about Irish America. Mm. We can have our views in terms of where they see Ireland. But it meant so much to them to have that link maintained. So many of these people wouldn't travel back regularly. So they're kind of that
but
intimate.
If you were going into
Ireland
the Oval Office, suppose you were Taoiseach in your wildest imagination, you were going in as Taoiseach, and this is a drill, baby, drill, burn, baby, burn president. I mean, what would you be saying to him?
I try and make that meeting count. I think we don't want it, like Alice said, we don't want it becoming a kind of a jokey thing about Doonbeg. What I asked the Taoiseach...
Well, I'm saying that in all seriousness because...
No, I agree.
I'm not dismissing it because the man's behaviour is going in such a direction that you don't know how he sees Ireland. And you've been over there in the good times, Roderick, and you represented our country well, as always do our politicians. But then when you go abroad, you just meet a chosen few. I mean, I've had people who send me back photographs from embassies having glasses of wine and a chat. But there are real concerns now because we're talking about a different climate, aren't we?
But I think it's important that the Taoiseach makes that meeting count. And what I asked him last week in the Dáil is raise the funding for UNRWA. That's something which we can meaningfully impact. Trump administration through USAID have cut off funding for UNRWA. That puts millions, literally millions of Palestinians at risk of hunger. Ireland has had a strong track record in supporting UNRWA. And indeed, in fairness to him, the Taoiseach himself has been very strong.
Given the attitude of Trump to the Palestinians, you want to ethnically cleanse them out of Gaza. And what the Taoiseach would be saying is, we need you to fund UNRWA to feed and help and medically care for the people of Gaza that you want to displace to Egypt or Jordan or wherever.
Just on that point, and I think it does place what is taking place in the United States and indeed around the world in the correct context, because Ireland has increased funding for UNRWA only last week by 20 million euro. And I think it's really important that we don't conflate the conversations that we're all having in our homes. And indeed, you know, Alice Leahy is someone who is widely admired by everyone for the work that she does for vulnerable people. And, you know, the voice that she is speaking to, there are lots of these voices around Ireland, but there's another voice too. And that's the person going to work every single day who's working perhaps in an American firm, who is one of the 400,000 people that are directly or indirectly working for firms that from the United States that employ people in this country. And we can't lose sight of that reality in terms of what is Ireland's interest. But that doesn't in any way diminish or conflate all of the very strongly held views this country has about the rule of law, about environment, about our approach to the Middle East, which are diametrically different to the US administration. But we have to put forward Ireland's best interests in every case, in every circumstance. And that's really what the Irish government are doing. And in fairness to Roderick...
Do you actually believe that any of that tough talk will happen? That Micheál Martin will be going in and saying, listen, pulling the funding from UNRWA is disgraceful, leaving the WHO, leaving millions of children in the developing world vulnerable to disease and so on because you're no longer part of the WHO. USAID pulling out... disgraceful carry-on again, leaving even Americans high and dry in places like Congo as they pull their staff back. Do you really think that Micheál Martin is going to raise
What I strongly believe is you achieve nothing by banging your hand on the desk. We had all this
debate. The way to achieve something is not this tough talk that Roderick recommends or you're recommending that we do. It's basically kissing his ass. That's what works.
The Taoiseach has to make this meeting count, Pat. And, you know, Micheál Martin, and I would give him credit for this, he has been strong internationally on issues to do with Palestine. But this, when he's in that room, and I don't envy him. It's going to be a really difficult engagement. But he has an obligation in as much as that he's continuing to create and have that link with America. We also have to speak truth to power, and we have to use those opportunities that we do have to actually make a difference. And particularly highlighting the UNRWA issue, I think
Micheál
is a valuable
Martin
use
is
of that.
Micheál Martin is a truthful man, but there's no point in speaking to Trump, as we can see. And has he got the invitation to that meeting yet?
No.
Well, then, I mean, then it's a hypothetical question.
Bertie Ahern, when he was on with us, and Bertie got...
And Bertie, you'd need out there.
He was bang on with Ukraine, his analysis of Ukraine. John Bolton, we played a clip from him this morning giving exactly the same analysis as Bertie Ahern. But what Bertie's saying is the way to play this is treated simply as fraternal relations about our national feast and all the cordial... relationships that we've had over the years. That's the only way to play it. Playing hardball with Trump on Palestine or UNRWA is simply not going to work.
But the way you're describing it there, you're talking about essentially diplomatic or negotiations tactics, playing hardball. I mean, what Ireland has to do in the broader global context is to work with the EU. And the EU are preparing in terms of their response when it comes to tariffs. The EU is preparing a common position when it comes to Ukraine and indeed you know, they're the discussions that are happening today and up to Sunday at the Munich conference that both the Taoiseach and the Taoiseach will be present at. That is how we're going to make our voice count, is about influencing the European process and how we respond. But we do have to ensure that we remain, that we continue to have those cultural and economic ties, that we strengthen them at every opportunity that we get with the United States, from an Ireland perspective, because that is, let's be truthful about it, that is what has served this country extremely well over the last 30 or 40 years. There are people who have mortgages, who have homes, who have families to feed, all of whom are benefiting from the investment that United States companies make here, and indeed are benefiting from the Irish companies that have grown off the back of the foreign direct investment.
Well, James, nobody could disagree with you, but we are dealing with a very different type of president at the minute, and that's what's so worrying about it. And everything you say is right, and everything Roderick has said about, you know, working with the Americans. But this is a different time. And listening and looking at the president of America at the minute, you would have to be worried. How much of it is he going to listen to?
Well, I think we're very worried about lots of things that the United States administration are doing. I mean, I was someone who was, you know, as a student, was out against the war in Iraq when George Bush was president. And there was a lot of Irish people who were extremely concerned, a lot of Europeans who were extremely concerned. We have seen this before. Perhaps some of the, undoubtedly, this is a unique presidency and perhaps the most concerning in my lifetime. But we have to engage. We can't simply decide that we don't like this president. This is the one that has been elected by the American people. We have to ensure that we put our...
There's a word that is coming to mind. It's appeasement.
I think the engagement has to be on the basis of values as well, Pat. And I think that's, I suppose, where I think it is important that that engagement, that, look, it is going to take place, but it has to be on the basis of the strong values that we have. It can't just be we're doing the shamrock, diddly-idle, kind of a touch the hat to Irish America. It has to be a valid use of that insight, that access we have.
That's what somebody should be saying to President Trump.
Yeah, well,
he has to be prepared, but who can get through to him?
Well, we have to hope that the Taoiseach takes that initiative and doesn't allow it just become a kind of a soft photo op, that it there actually is a meaningful engagement
on
some of the really damaging things that the new administration
of Trump
are doing.
I mean, you can look at the last election and he won by whatever tiny margin he won. He keeps all calling it an overwhelming landslide, which it wasn't. But still, he won the Electoral College and he won the popular vote. But the creation of Trump is as a result of a reaction to what might be termed the woke agenda in the United States, and whether the Democrats lost touch with the ordinary working people in terms of some of the things they were espousing. Because the Democrats are much broader a church than the Republicans are. The Republicans are more one-dimensional nowadays under Trump than the Democrats are.
And what struck me is that throughout that campaign, the Trump and those around him portrayed themselves as representing, you know, the middle class of America. But when you actually looked at the inauguration, when you look at what we've seen before, it's not the middle class. It is the absolute oligarchs who now have the control in this new government. And that this bizarre situation where Elon Musk has enormous power, unprecedented power for someone who has no sort of elected office, shows, I think, that so much of what was, fed, portrayed across social media as Trump representing this kind of return back to the values of middle America was false, when it's actually the key focus was on the values and what's good for the most wealthy in American society.
The lack of self-awareness in Trump is quite extraordinary. In the Oval Office the other day, he was talking about bullies.
Yeah.
I don't know whether you saw any of you saw that. And he's saying, you know, the bully, in my experience of over the years dealing with bullies, that the bully is generally the weakest person in the room. And without any trace of irony, he said that, which is quite extraordinary. Anyway, let's move on to domestic matters. And the IT system in the Arts Council, 7 million, some of which it's hoped will be retrieved, down the tubes. James?
It's really shocking. And, you know, in fairness to the new minister, Patrick O'Donovan, when he came in, he brought this to Cabinet at the earliest opportunity that it seems that this was identified.
Andrea Martin knew about this, Roderick, isn't that so?
Pardon?
Andrea Martin as Minister for...
Catherine Martin.
Yeah, I think of a lawyer.
Well, I suppose that anger that's there is absolutely justified in terms of this waste of money.
Why did Catherine Martin not bring it to the attention of Cabinet before she left government?
Well, I spoke to Catherine about this earlier today, and what she said to me was, in terms of that particular question, she wanted to bring an investigation, which she commissioned in I think June of this year, about the very substantial waste of money here, to Cabinet at the same time as the annual report, in order for the issues why this waste of money took place and what steps could be put in place to actually address it going forward, so they could be addressed at Cabinet.
No, but as it happens, she wasn't re-elected, but had she been attempting to get re-elected with that news out there, her demise would have been assured, one suspects.
I can't kind of give that as a counterfactual. I became aware of this on Tuesday when the issue came out following the Cabinet meeting.
That is the first time, Pat, that we've heard that Catherine Martin, at least the first time I've heard it, that Catherine Martin, you know, was fully briefed on this as far back as June and took a decision not to bring it to Cabinet. And that's why, you know, we really do need to have this inquired into. We need to get the committees, the Oireachtas committees, up and running.
I think that
have the Public
important.
Accounts Committee to go into this. Is
this not you kicking the Greens while they're down and no longer in government? You would have had to rush to Catherine's defence if the Green Party.
Well, I'm responding to what's happening live on radio here. It's the first time I've heard it being said that Catherine Martin was fully aware of this in June and didn't bring it to Cabinet.
Alice.
Well, I went into work the other morning, and as I was having my mug of Barry's tea, I said to my colleagues, well, I'm bothered and bewildered by all of what's going on in our country. I mean, when you look at the Arts Council, there's a certain elitism around the arts in this country, while there are still a lot of singers and artists who are earning hardly anything. And yet you see all of this money, 6.7 million. And when you look at agencies, small businesses, agencies like our own throughout the country, the amount of time and money that has to be spent on dealing with the bureaucracy to get a measly few euros. Now, we don't get any money from the state and we don't look for it. But I think this is truly shocking. And it doesn't stop there, because we had the bike shed, we had the security hut, we then had the 70-metre wall. And then we had the 6.6 million the Arts Council has abandoned. And now they're thinking of appointing another consultant, which would cost another million or two, to sort this out. Now, this clearly isn't good enough. The minister didn't. And then if you bring it up at the Public Accounts Committee, nobody can be held accountable. So where does this all end? And I just wonder, I was thinking on my way in, what type of training do politicians get when they are elected? Because some are elected, the two people around me, you have excellent qualifications in law, but there are politicians who have no training. So why is, and they are depending on the civil servants, and I have come across some very good civil servants, but there is something radically wrong. And then somebody who owes very little money, they're hounded through the courts, they're demonised, and you have this, but it's very easy to spend someone else's money, and this is taxpayers' money.
Alice really hits the nail on the head. There must be so many artists listening to this discussion who've gone through the hoops to try and get a grant from the Arts Council, filled out millions of paperwork, didn't get through for whatever reason, and now it's been identified and was said by the Taoiseach in the Dáil on Thursday that public procurement was breached in this whole entire process, that, you know, monies were just expanded upon when they should have been notified of.
So why did that happen? We'll get the report, obviously, that Catherine Martin commissioned. Mm-hmm. But the question is nobody kind of routinely monitoring all of this? I mean, everyone is comparing it to the household. Mm-hmm. And Pascal, when he was on this morning, saying, we get so many expenditure decisions right in building our roads, building schools and so on. But a texter responded immediately. Mm-hmm. In any household, if you have a couple of real cock-ups, that household can go broke.
And I think that's why
the state never goes broke.
This had to have been monitored. The Arts Council is an entity that receives 140 million euro of a budget allocation. The idea, it has a board, it has a whole corporate governance structure. The idea that this just sort of trundle along for year after year after year, It's just unbelievable. It like this would never happen in a private sector entity
or in,
with that
or
kind
in
of a
the
budget.
NGO sector.
Or they'd shut down a charity,
James,
that would have 500,000 euro for doing something less.
But I think also, James, we have to look at how are people appointed to boards of these companies, because very often they are political friends and they may not have the experience that's required. And I think
that's what we saw on the RTE board.
Yes, very same.
I think this is why, and I do welcome the external investigation that Minister O'Donovan has introduced here, because I think we need to look at the very start of this particular project in 2018, in 2019, when this was set out, look at the value for money case that was put forward there, and look at how this project was implemented over those years, and bring in the SecGen, the former SecGen, the board, the former board, and the relevant ministers. And I think that is
now,
how
you've
we
been
get
in
an understanding
as a minister of government. So just
place.
Looking down through all your areas of responsibility, what kind of teams did you have that, you know, because you've so many broad responsibilities. Mm-hmm. I mean, are there individuals who have specific responsibilities for a project like this thing in the Arts Council? Would there be a civil servant whose job it would be to keep an eye on that?
There would,
you know, whether it's a bicycle shed or whether it's a computer.
There'd be an assistant sec and principal officers who would look after specific state agencies. So in my former department, we would have TUSLA, for example, which is a very large budget now, over €1 billion. We'd have had an entire division of our department overseeing the activities of TUSLA, for example. A smaller agency, let's say the Adoption Authority of Ireland, would have had a principal officer and a team around it as well.
So there are people that we can identify who did not perhaps do their jobs properly in keeping an eye on this runaway project in the Arts Council.
In any of these situations, there will be a team of civil servants within the particular department who would look at the oversight, who would look at the spend, and who actually have to go to the Department of Public Expenditure and, you know, advocate for funding for this particular agency on an annual basis. So, yeah, there is a team there who would have had oversight.
So, Alice, there are people there who are supposed to keep an eye on these
things.
Then
they mustn't be doing they're not doing their job if this was allowed to happen. Isn't that the problem? And I think too many people on these boards and making decisions are too far removed from what's happening on the ground.
Yeah.
And they're just
this computer, it would appear, was designed to process the thousands of applications that come in.
Which, in fairness, most artists have said was needed, that a new system was needed.
Yeah.
And I think, you know,
I don't think anyone's objecting to a new system.
No, exactly.
It's the waste of money.
Of course.
There's so many people are relying on computers now that there's no discussion taking place around as we're having today.
But the bread and butter of the Arts Council is to give the money that you're granted to. And they set
and
up a whole...
Struggling people with nothing.
You know, this was presumably one of the highest strategic imperatives of the Arts Council to get this right. They got it spectacularly wrong, wasted all of this money. It's gone nowhere. And it's only now that we're all understanding about it, hearing about it. Like it really, this, and you know, there's three layers to this. The Arts Council have a responsibility. They have a corporate governance structure. So we have to put responsibility on them. Absolutely, the department have an oversight role. They have responsibility, and there may indeed be political responsibility on top of that. But we need to look at these things.
Yeah, but somebody's writing the checks. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The Arts Council can't write the check unless the money is given to them to write that check.
And
so
indeed,
somebody's okaying that check.
Any sort of significant spending project, particularly capital, goes through, is overseen by, is what has to be approved by DEEPER initially, because you have to go get that oversight and get that approval before you can actually expend.
So a bicycle
processes.
Shed, a wall, a security hut, all of those have to
and
get
what
that.
What else is happening? There's probably more
that we don't know about. Mm-hmm.
So really, Roderick, you know, with all these committees and all this oversight, this went spectacularly wrong.
I don't think anyone's. Disputing that point, Alice. I don't think so.
Yeah. No, but is the question I asked Pascal Donohue this morning is about whether, for people who are spending other people's money, it's very easy to do. They don't mind it the same way as they'd mind their own. I mean, we mentioned Trump earlier as someone who wants other people to rebuild Gaza while he owns it. I mean, it's quite extraordinary. Not prepared to put a dollar of US money in.
Mm-hmm. I think it is absolutely right, the outrage that we're talking about in terms of this project, in terms of some of the others that Alice has listed. I think, Pat, though, that you made a very broad statement there about every civil servant, every public agency, in terms of thinking it's easy to spend public money. Like
There is that attitude, isn't it?
It is fair to say, like, we have a budget of almost €100 billion every year in this state, and a lot of that money goes where it's needed and makes a really
But did you ever
difference.
Hear that expression? My late father used to use it all the time. Look after the pennies and the pounds will look after. In other words, every small project should be guarded as closely as... I was going to say the Children's Hospital.
And I've
seen civil servants look to save the state money, look to guard the... treat the role they have, the responsibility they have with the respect it deserves, and treat the public investment with the respect it deserves. So just it is worth just...
But I think it's worth noting that this is a body whose budget increased very significantly over the last 5 years. And we have seen that with other entities, like, say, the Peter McVerry Trust, where entities that perhaps had smaller amounts of money that they were managing and suddenly starts to bloat, that things start to run away with it. We need to garner all the facts in relation to this, but I think that's worth pointing out.
We can't even analyse the Peter McVerry Trust situation until we get more of the facts, because... There are, I think, even Garda investigations currently ongoing. There we have to leave it today. Alice Leahy, Director of the Alice Leahy Trust, James Gagan, Fine Gael TD for Dublin Bay South, Roderick O'Gorman, Leader of the Green Party and TD for Dublin West. Thank you all very much for joining us. Now, that's all we have time for. A reminder that our items from today are uploaded as podcasts, which you can listen to in the Newstalk app powered by Go Loud. Just search for The Pat Kenny Show.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on Newstalk.